At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Accompanied by the First Lady of the United States, POTUS, the President of the United States, is just entering the United Nations building over on First Avenue. You hear a lot about all the traffic jams and so forth that externally causes upset and inconvenience to New Yorkers. But I have to say, folks, in this instance, it is more than worth it if the President of the United States, who's been sounding more macho in terms of promoting the remarks he'll be making within the next few minutes, if he can forge a deal with the Russian President Vladimir Putin, then I am all for it when it comes to dealing with the Syrian crisis that we can no longer avoid, if only for our own self-interest. Let me explain. It's one thing to say you don't want to intervene in another nation's civil war. What business do we have? It's another thing when that nation's civil war has not only claimed 500,000 lives or close to it, it has unleashed a flood of immigrants, refugees, fleeing the violence, fleeing the anarchy. And you see where they're going. They're going any place they can find a better life. So they're going by land through Turkey to Greece, from Greece into the rest of Europe. Germany now facing 1 million refugees within the next couple of months. How does that society sustain that kind of disruption? And Germany is a nation that is well run with a perfect infrastructure and plenty of economic opportunity. That's not the case in much of Eastern Europe that is also being disrupted by all this. Now, the President of the United States says that the United States will be accepting 200,000 Syrian refugees. How disruptive will that be? You know, at the very least, Noam Layden, that it will infect and affect the political dialogue. It will infect and affect the whole presidential race. Forget about the debate over exporting or deporting 11 million Mexican and other undocumented immigrants who are here. Now you're going to have the debate about accepting these refugees from Syria. Many of them, as I've pointed out, if you look at the newsreels, they're not 3-year-olds. They're 20-year-olds. The vast majority of them are men, young men. How are you going to vet them? How are you going to know that they're not bringing with them the seeds of the kind of disruption that we fear from those who are propagandized or even planted by ISIS? It is in America's vested natural interest, national interest, national and natural interests, that Barack Obama today, in this strength that he is expected to show before the General Assembly of the United Nations, it is incumbent on the President of the United States to reach out to Vladimir Putin and say to him, Russia and the United States have plenty of beefs. We've got the Ukraine. We've got the disruption in terms of the seizure of Crimea. We've got a million issues with you, Vladimir Putin. But here in this one place, in Syria, we are on the same side. We are on the same side. Let's make war on ISIS. Let's crush ISIS. And then you could figure out what you do with the Syrian dictator, Bashar Assad, and all the rest of it in Syria going forward. First, you have to defeat this malignant force that has unleashed this migrant crisis, this refugee crisis that has butchered so many people. I know Assad is bad. I know that Assad has been guilty of excesses and violence against his own people. I know that he has helped perpetuate this war of the Shiites against the Sunnis. I get that. I also get that Gaddafi was a bad guy in Libya. But let me ask you to remember, was Libya better off or worse off under Gaddafi than it is today? It's the same with Syria. Forget about Bashar Assad for this minute. Get over the fact that we don't like him and that he's a bad person. Work with Russia to get a safe haven in Syria where these people can be fed and nurtured, where they can have some economic opportunity, where they can live with reasonable security. Create that with the might of Russia and the might of the United States on the same side for right now. Then you figure out what you're going to do about Bashar Assad going forward. But I hope that the president, who now wants to be blunt, he says, now wants to be clear in the message and concise in the message of where the United States stands. I'm praying. I got this praying thing because the Pope was here. He's made me very spiritual. I am praying that the president of the United States doesn't stick it in Russia's eye right now. Ukraine can wait for right now. There's reasonable stability there right now. Notice you haven't heard about the fighting in eastern Ukraine lately. I'm sure that there's a method to that madness. But for right now, forget about everything else. Forget about every beef we ever had with Iran. Forget about every beef we ever had with Russia. Put it aside for right now. Today, these men, later today, Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama will be face to face. I am praying that they can put aside this dueling dick thing for one minute to move forward, to make some kind of peace with each other long enough to get the Russian military and that big base they have, those naval assets and the land-based aircraft that we have. Let's get some Russian boots on the ground. Make some part of Syria a safe haven. Donald Trump is advocating this, by the way. I'm not sure who came up with the idea first. But this is the way forward. You've got to be proactive. Enough already. Do you want every single Syrian person to be disrupted, to have their homes destroyed, to have them on the move? And they, you want them, where are we going to put them? Brooklyn Heights, where do you want to put them? You know, you name the neighbor. Jersey City, they're going to go to Jersey City.
Some are already there.
They're already there. You've got to let Syria be a place where Syrians can live with a reasonable expectation that they're not going to be blown up, either by a barrel bomb from Bashar Assad or a sharpened machete from ISIS. I don't think that's too much to ask. So I'm praying that the president does that. We are monitoring. Traditionally, Brazil opens the General Assembly. As I recall, the president is up next. You will certainly hear portions of what he has to say, if not the lion's share of what he has to say, right here on 77 WABC. But this is the crisis of the moment. You have an entire country that has been torn asunder. You have an entire population. I don't know, what are the 6-8 million Syrians? I mean, we'll look it up, but are they all going to take to the... You see that story in the New York Times yesterday about how everyone's selling life jackets now in Western Turkey, life jackets and rubber boats for one-way trips into Greece and Europe? It's pathetic. It is sad. I mean, some of them are just economic refugees, but I mean, a lot of people just want to see a better life.
It's hard to make the argument that they're only economic, though.
In Syria, it is impossible.
You know, it's going to be a fascinating...
How you been?
Well, I've been great. I was thinking that usually the UN General Assembly is a little bit of a yawner, but I think this morning that won't be the case because you'll have President Obama, and I'm sure he'll talk a lot about Syria. Then you'll have Vladimir Putin speaking as well today. He'll be talking about Syria. Then you'll have Iranian President Rouhani talking, of course, about Syria. So within the next couple of hours, we're going to hear the world's argument of how to deal with the Syrian civil war.
Crash, go to break right now so we catch the president who is up next. We'll be right back.
This is a WABC News Bulletin.
Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the United States addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Instead of any foreign power. And by building an international system that imposes a cost on those who choose conflict over cooperation. An order that recognizes the dignity and equal worth of all people. That is the work of 7 decades. That is the ideal that this body, at its best, has pursued.
The president talking about the role of the United Nations traditionally.
Of course, there have been too many times when, collectively, we have fallen short of these ideals. Over 7 decades, terrible conflicts have claimed untold victims. But we have pressed forward, slowly, steadily, to make a system of international rules and norms that are better and stronger and more consistent. It is this international order that is underwritten, unparalleled advances in human liberty and prosperity.
All right, the president talking about the role of the United Nations traditionally. He obviously is about to give us the punchline of what he wants the United Nations to do vis-a-vis Syria. Let's listen some more.
That has lifted more than 1 billion people from poverty. It is these international principles that have helped constrain bigger countries from imposing our will on smaller ones and advance the emergence of democracy and development, and individual liberty on every continent. This progress is real. It can be documented in lives saved and agreements forged, in diseases conquered, and in mouths fed. And yet we come together today knowing that the march of human progress never travels in a straight line. That our work is far from complete.
As the president makes this address, building up to his punchline, we had a shot of the American delegation. Secretary of State John Kerry yawned.
Today we see the collapse of strong men and fragile states breeding conflict and driving innocent men, women, and children across borders on an epic scale.
Here we go.
Brutal networks of terror have stepped into the vacuum. Technologies that empower individuals are now also exploited by those who spread disinformation or suppress dissent or radicalize our youth. Global capital flows have powered growth and investment, but also increased risk of contagion, weakened the bargaining power of workers, and accelerated inequality. How should we respond to these trends? There are those who argue that the ideals enshrined in the UN Charter are unachievable or out of date, a legacy of a post-war era not suited to our own. Effectively, they argue for a return to the rules that applied for most of human history and that predate this institution, the belief that power is a zero-sum game, that might makes right, that strong states must impose their will on weaker ones, that the rights of individuals don't matter, and that in a time of rapid change, order must be imposed
by force. I'm hoping he's not building up to say he doesn't want Putin to be the strong man to make peace. That it remains the job of the United Nations, which is like a laugh line to me.
Contravene international law. We see an erosion of the democratic principles and human rights that are fundamental to this institution's mission. Information is strictly controlled, the space for civil society restricted. We're told that such retrenchment is required to beat back disorder, that it's the only way to stamp out terrorism or prevent foreign meddling. In accordance with this logic, we should support tyrants like Bashar al-Assad, who drops barrel bombs to massacre innocent children, because the alternative is surely worse. This The increasing skepticism of our international order can also be found in the most advanced democracies. We see greater polarization, more frequent gridlock, movements on the far right and sometimes the left that insist on stopping the trade that binds our fates to other nations, calling for the building of walls to keep out immigrants. And most ominously, we see the fears of ordinary people being exploited through appeals to sectarianism, or tribalism, or racism, or anti-Semitism. Appeals to a glorious past before the body politic was infected by those who look different or worship God differently. A politics of us versus them. The United States is not immune from this. Even as our economy is growing and our troops have largely returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, we see in our debates about America's role in the world a notion of strength that is defined by opposition to old enemies, perceived adversaries, a rising China, or a resurgent Russia, a revolutionary Iran, or an Islam that is incompatible with peace. We see an argument made that the only strength that matters for the United States is bellicose words and shows of military force, that cooperation and diplomacy will not work.
So far, it sounds like a liberal idealist
President of the United
lecturing
States,
a class at
I'm
Harvard.
Of the dangers that we face. They cross my desk every morning. I lead the strongest military that the world has ever known. And I will never hesitate to protect my country or our allies unilaterally and by force where necessary. But I stand before you today believing in my core that we, the nations of the world, cannot return to the old ways of conflict and coercion. We cannot look backwards. We live in an integrated world, one in which we all have a stake in each other's success. We cannot turn back those forces of integration. No nation in this assembly can insulate itself from the threat of terrorism or the risk of financial contagion, the flow of migrants, or the danger of a warming planet. The disorder we see is not driven solely by competition between nations or any single ideology. And if we cannot work together more effectively, we will all suffer the consequences. That is true for the United States as well. No matter how powerful our military, how strong our economy,
I just am praying that he gets around to some specific remedy for the crisis at hand in Syria, rather than just continue telling us to appeal to our better angels.
Even hundreds of thousands of brave, effective troops, trillions of dollars from our treasury, cannot by itself impose stability on a foreign land. Unless we work with other nations under the mantle of international norms and principles and law that offer legitimacy to our efforts, we will not succeed. And unless we work together to defeat the ideas that drive different communities in a country like Iraq into conflict, any order that our militaries can impose will be temporary. And just as force alone cannot impose order internationally, I believe in my core that repression cannot forge the social cohesion for nations to succeed.
We get this, Mr. President. Tell us what to do.
The history of the last two decades proves that in today's world, dictatorships are unstable. The strong men of today become the spark of revolution tomorrow. You can jail your opponents, but you can't imprison ideas. You can try to control access to
information. This sounds too much like the speech he made in Cairo that unleashed the Arab Spring, which resulted in disaster in the region.
It is not a conspiracy of U.S.-backed NGOs that expose corruption and raise the expectations of people around the globe. It's technology, social media, and the irreducible desire of people everywhere to make their own choices about how they are governed. Indeed, I believe that in today's world, the measure of strength is no longer defined by the control of territory. Lasting prosperity does not come solely from the ability to access and extract raw materials. The strength of nations depends on the success of their people, their knowledge, their innovation, their imagination, their creativity, their drive, their opportunity. And that, in turn, depends on individual rights and good governance and personal security. Internal repression and foreign aggression are both symptoms of the failure to provide this foundation.
I'm sorry, so far, as the President of the United States addresses the General Assembly of the United Nations, I've heard nothing but platitudes and philosophy and idealism and a call against repression and dictatorship, and even the military can impose peace that lasts, that you've got to deal with the structural problems. We get all that. But what about the emergency in front of your nose, Mr. President? What are we going to do about Syria? You've got to give us something specific. I appreciate a good sermon. But we had the Pope here. That was the Pope's job to give us a good sermon. Your job is to give us a solution and to help impose a solution. Your job now is to be a leader, the leader of the free world who has the guts to work with the Russians to create stability in Syria.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
They fuel sectarian conflict that endangers the entire region.
The President of the United States addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations. Welcome back to 77 WABC. I'm Geraldo along with Noam Layden. It is 39 minutes after 10 o'clock on this lovely fall Monday, September 28th. Time flies. The winter is coming. Hopefully there can be a thaw between Russia and the United States, but it does not appear to me, as the President makes this speech about broad principles, that we are heading in that direction. He is talking about diplomacy, the need for the sticking to the international norms and the treaties, creating the body of the world body, and et cetera. He got his first applause line when he predicted that Congress will soon vote, or will eventually, in the short term, vote to end all the embargo vis-a-vis Cuba. I give him some applause on that as well. It does not seem, for a man who is advertising known that he was going to make a blunt speech, this doesn't sound bluntish to me at all. It sounds like the kind of speech you would make after your presidency was over, almost.
You got the sense we were getting a buildup to this great moment where he was giving us an education of how the UN's worked back in the day and should work that way again, but he's never gotten past that yet.
No, he is meeting with Vladimir Putin later in the day. I mean, we want them to cool their suspicions, see the mutual interests that both have in bringing stability to Syria, allowing the migrants to stay home securely and in peace. But if he, I mean, we'll listen for a couple of more minutes, but if what the president is suggesting is that the United Nations, those blue helmets, I mean, I'm telling you, I've been covering the Middle East since 1973. The UN blue helmets that were the peacekeepers, you see them up in northern Israel, in Lebanon, and they were very heavily involved up there. It was like they were a joke. I mean, with all due respect, I mean, you love the fact that they're there. I mean, they're from Pakistan and Nepal and places like that, but absolutely ineffective in terms of keeping the peace. It was ultimately Israel and Lebanon and the Hezbollah and Hamas, everybody, you know, at some point deciding what was in their best interest. But, all right, now the president, all right, let's listen in because he's talking about Libya and hopefully he's going to get to Syria. Let's listen a couple more minutes. Said the coalition should have done more in Libya. Duh.
These new capabilities can prevent mass killing and ensure that peace agreements are more than words on paper. But we have to do it together. Together, we must strengthen our collective capacity to establish security where order
has broken
down.
I'm telling you, not happening. This is like,
support those who seek.
Now I'm really looking forward to the Trump tax plan at 11 o'clock if the tax plan is more important than the president talking about world peace and Syria and the migrant crisis. I just hope he gets to it. I will continue to monitor it. If he does get to it, then I obviously will bring that to you, bring that to you live. In the meantime, 866-ERALDO, what's on your mind, Bobby in Greenpoint? Thanks for calling. What's up?
And you know what it is? It's blah, 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 blah. This guy is a lame duck loser with nothing new to offer. It's boring, hackneyed, rehashed trash. Pure pap. That's a waste of breath and a waste of time.
Wish I disagreed with you.
This guy got shown the door, pushed out, ushered out, and get someone new in there who actually knows what he's doing. This kumbaya crap has got me sick to my stomach, and that's what we knew we were going to get with him, even though a lot of us hoped he would be better than this.
All right, Bobby, you know, I love the guy personally, the president. I love his family. I sort of feel the way I feel about de Blasio. You know, I don't have love for de Blasio, but I have tremendous affection for his family, his wonderful family. I don't like what he's accomplished or how he's working. And this is kind of sad, almost. I just want more firmness. I wish I could have talked to him for 30 seconds this morning. Now, you're going to, you know, give him a pep talk, like a high school football coach almost. Now, go in there. Now, go in there and you tell him that you understand that there's differences between you and Putin, between the United States and Russia. But you're going to put aside those differences, and damn it, you're going to create a stability in Syria where these poor people don't get uprooted from their homes, that they aren't being killed by barrel bombs, they're not getting their heads cut off, archaeological sites aren't being defaced by these vandals. I mean, you got to give me something. Give me some meat here. This is like he said, the caller just said. James in Long Island. What's up, James?
Good morning, Geraldo.
Thanks for calling.
I love you, Geraldo, but you put so much faith in this guy, and he's telling you exactly what he's going to do. Nothing. But with the meeting with the Russian president, the Russian president is going to tell him, listen, I'm going to take care of the problem, and then I'm going to control the Middle East, and that's the way it's going to be. And he's going to slink out of the room with his liberal ideas. He's not doing nothing, and for nobody. He's going to spread the refugees all over the world, and that's what he thinks is going to solve the problem. He's an empty suit. He's an empty suit. He's an empty suit, and that's all he is an empty suit.
Well, I don't know about the suit, but I have to say that, again, I cannot deny the ultimate truth of James either. All right, let's listen another minute.
The Syrian people can begin to rebuild. We know that ISIL, which emerged out of the chaos of Iraq and Syria, depends on perpetual war to survive. But we also know that they gain adherence because of a poisonous ideology. So part of our job together is to work to reject such extremism that infects too many of our young people.
Yeah, we get that.
Part of that effort must be a continued rejection by Muslims of those who distort Islam to preach intolerance and promote violence.
I get
that. It must also involve a rejection by non-Muslims of the ignorance that equates Islam with terror.
But tell us something we don't know. Tell us something you don't know. An applause line for the Muslims in the crowd. I mean, okay.
This work will take
world
time.
World peace. I want world peace. Sounds like a Miss America speech.
There are no easy answers to Syria, and there.
It sounds like a Miss America
speech.
I want world
peace. That are taking place in much of the Middle East and North Africa.
What are you going to do?
But so many families need help right now. They don't have time. And that's why the United States is increasing the number of refugees who we welcome within our borders.
Oy vey. This is a
that's
solution.
That's why we will continue to be the largest donor of assistance to support those refugees. And today we are launching new efforts to ensure that our people and our businesses, our universities, and our NGOs can help as well. Because in the faces of suffering families,
how about dealing with the problem at the source?
Our nation of immigrants sees ourselves.
Why do we have the refugees? Why not deal with that? I'm telling you, this is a speech devoid of courage. And I thought it was going to be gutsy. I am so disappointed. I really am. I thought that blunt speech, there's nothing blunt about this speech.
You know, the reason you thought it was going to be gutsy is the White House told us in anticipation of this that this was going to be a gutsy speech. Don't miss it. Tune in.
So you tell me what the headline of the speech is. What is the headline?
Is the headline
going to say the United States will work with Russia in Syria militarily? Will we coordinate our efforts against ISIS?
Look, and the only thing I can think of and is that this is some strategy for this meeting that's going to take place later today, that they're going to get down to the details.
Whoever gave him that idea should get slapped around because he's going to meet Putin now. In other words, he's talking world peace and when Putin is doing push-ups.
Putin's in Syria already. He's already in the battle. He's in Syria.
48 minutes. Maybe he'll spit something out that means that we're going to be doing something proactive rather than doing the best we can to help victims, which is a fine thing, by the way. I am totally in favor of compassion, but that's the Pope's job, compassion. The president's job is to be the world leader that we crave, to take the world's largest military, ally it with the world's second largest military, already on the ground with massive bases in Syria. Put Russian boots on the ground. Let me ask you this, ladies and gentlemen. Which do you prefer? You prefer Russia or ISIS? I know that's a hard choice in Syria. I know that's a hard choice. But I tell you, who's chopping heads off? Who's destroying archaeological sites? Who's raping women? The United States would stand shoulder to shoulder with Russia in Syria. And instead, we're getting a speech that prosperity is cruelly out of reach for too many people. You know something? I knew that. 49 minutes after 10.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
You've got an idea. I want to hear it. Because so far, the president has been devoid of ideas other than...
That is what I believe is America's greatest strength.
Idealistic platitudes.
Not everybody in America agrees with me. That's part of democracy.
He's speaking for the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Walk the streets of this city right now and pass churches and synagogues and temples and mosques where people worship freely. The fact that our nation of immigrants mirrors the diversity of the world, you can find everybody from everywhere here in New York City.
I'm into that.
The fact that in this country, everybody can contribute. Everybody can participate, no matter who they are or what they look like or who they love. That's what makes us strong. And I believe that what is true for America is true for
virtually all. Let me squeeze Tony from Tom's River in. Thanks to an 866-year-older. Tony, what's on your mind, bud?
Yeah, Geraldo.
You're on, man.
Okay. There's been a war every 10 years since 1776. There's never been a peacetime president. So when he's given this speech, it's a brilliant speech with a coded subtext. And it's to get people to say, we got to do something. So we're going
to... So this is a brilliant speech with a subtext. But is it... Brilliant in the sense that it will make a difference?
Yes, because he's a man of no action. That's the surface lecture. Underneath is, I know what you want me to do. We'll put the Russians in there. They'll need help, and then we're going in there because capitalism, according to Noam Chomsky, cannot survive without war. There's been a war every 10 years.
I'm not sure what your message is, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you're telling us.
That this is bad
I'm
or good?
The subtext is.
No, I get the subtext bit, but I'm not sure whether you like what he's saying or not.
It's a hidden motive for war.
Oh, you think that he's trying to get us into trouble?
Oh, we're already in trouble.
Oh, that's
the
for sure.
The question is, there's no way out. Noam Chomsky's right that capitalism can't survive without war. What's the solution?
All right, Tony, I don't care about what the solution to war is. It's been war since there's been humans, even before, if you believe, a lot of the, what was a Space Odyssey? The apes had war. What I wanted was a specific remedy for the Syrian crisis.
Coming up right now, 11:04, and we're seeing that Donald Trump is about to lay out his tax plan. Let's go live to that right now.
Again, and working well again. It's a tax reform that I think will make America strong and great again. Americans are working. Too many jobs are being shipped overseas, and too many middle-income families cannot make ends meet. This plan directly meets these challenges and the challenges also of business. It will provide major tax relief for middle-income and for most other Americans. There will be a major tax reduction. It'll simplify the tax code. It'll grow the American economy at a level that it hasn't seen for decades.
Listening to Donald Trump live from Trump Tower unveiling his tax plan amid news today that some polls show Ben Carson catching up to the Donald. So here he is laying out some people complaining that there hasn't been beef to a lot of what he has said, and here's his tax plan.
Our economy strong. Changes for individuals will be at levels that you haven't seen in a long time. We're going to cut the individual rates from 7 brackets to 4. Simplification. 25%, 20%, 10%, 0. If you're single and earn less than $25,000, per year, or married and jointly, and $50,000. So, very important, if you're single and earn less than $25,000 or married and jointly earn less than $50,000, you'll not pay any income tax, nothing. This eliminates very strongly and quickly the marriage penalty, very unfair penalty. It eliminates the AMT, which is the alternative minimum tax. It ends the death tax. It's a double taxation. A lot of families go through hell over the death tax. It reduces or eliminates most of the deductions and loopholes available to special interests and to the very rich. In other words, it's going to, which is actually true, while preserving charitable giving and mortgage interest deductions, very importantly. It ends tax treatment of carried interest. Those are the hedge fund folks that I've been talking about for quite a while. They make a lot of money, carried interest. So it ends the current tax treatment of carried interest for speculative partnerships that do not grow businesses or create jobs and are not risking their own capital.
Big news. He's going to eliminate the death tax, the estate tax, calling it double taxation.
Because it's all about
business. If you make 25 grand as a single person, 50 grand as a married couple, you pay zero tax.
That are in serious trouble, that want to work, they can't work. So for business, no business of any size, from a Fortune 500 company to a mom-and-pop shop to a freelancer living from gig to gig, will pay more than 15% of their business income in taxes. Big reduction.
Cutting corporate income tax in half, essentially.
Of corporate
eliminating that carried interest loophole that allows the hedge fund billionaires not to pay ordinary income tax on their earnings.
Comes back discounted at a 10% tax rate and ends the deferral of taxes on corporate income earned abroad. Now, it's called corporate inversion. It's a huge subject. I've been watching politicians now for years, all talk, no action politicians. I've been watching them for years talking about bringing this money back. The number is probably $2.5 trillion.
Talking about corporate profits that are stowed overseas.
Republicans, Democrats, everybody. They can't make a deal. They don't know how to go about making a deal. The reason companies aren't bringing it back is the tax is onerous. It doesn't make sense to. In fact, many companies are leaving the United States. They're leaving our shores to go and collect their money. They're going, actually moving out of the United States for two reasons. The taxes are too high, and because they have tremendous that they can't bring back into this country when everybody wants them to bring it back in. It's called leadership. We will have that money brought back in. As an example, I have millions of dollars overseas. I can't bring it back in. We file papers. We've been doing this for a year and a half. You can't get it back in. So the money stays in other countries, and that's what happens. Not good for us. The level of leadership that we need to get things like this done is so important. But this is something, and I've been watching it for a long time, everybody agrees to. We also reduce or eliminate some business loopholes, many of them actually, and deductions made unnecessary or redundant by the new lower tax rate on business income. The tax rate now is so low that a lot of things which are complicated, which don't make sense, and which are unfair, are gone. And we phase in a reasonable cap on the deductibility of the business interest expense. So we are going to give you, we have a set of papers that actually, if you know business, is not so complex. And we're going to hand them out right now to the press. And I think you'll see, we have an amazing code. It will be simple, it will be easy, it will be fair. It's graduated. As you get up in income, you pay a little. Some of the very unfair deductions that certain people have been given who make a lot of money will not be available any longer. But I actually believe they'll do better because I think the economy will grow rapidly and will have something very special.
Now, what is interesting to me, Noam Layden, is that he has made a big point of his success, his personal success, his wealth as a billionaire, much of it self-made. That's been his strong suit. But people can't vote for someone who just says, vote for me because I'm successful. Now what he is suggesting is that many more Americans can be successful if the tax code was simplified, loopholes closed, incentives given to bring capital back to our shores, and a grossly or profoundly reduced rate, personal rate of income tax in terms of the amount you pay, the progressive income tax. And there are many, many Republicans who will not like that. They want a flat tax. They want everyone to pay a tax. He's a bit of a socialist in that regard. But I am interested to see what the economists say the impact on the deficit of the American budget will be if indeed the Trump plan is implemented. So far, though, it is intriguing, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, no income tax for families making $50,000 or less. I have to go and research this, but how many American families are in that boat where whether it's one income or dual incomes, but that $50,000 is what they make? And I like what he says about the marriage penalty. I mean, the marriage penalty has always been this sort of unfriendly thing to couples with dual incomes get taxed more than there being one breadwinner in the house. That never seemed, at least for me anyway, that never seemed fair.
It didn't seem fair. And I think by seizing on it, this may have a populist message. It will be interesting to see, because I think this is the first of his specific proposals. In other words, now he's putting on paper exactly what it is that he intends to do if elected president, what he intends to propose, advocate, and work for. It'll be a question of whether or not it makes sense fiscally. Let's listen a little bit more to Donald Trump at Trump Tower proposing a tax plan.
The press. Yes, go ahead.
All right.
No, I'm not going to do that yet. I have to get their approval. But we have some of the top people in the country worked on this. Well, we're looking at a 3%, but we think it can be 5%. It could even be 6%. We're going to have growth that will be tremendous. And by the way, if we have more than 3%, these numbers are really spectacular. And one of the things that they don't take into account in any big league fashion is the cutting. There is so much waste in government that I believe when I get in there, I'll be able to cut, without losing anything, to cut tremendous amounts off of the, and we're not even showing anything for that. So they're very conservative numbers. Yes, Sarah.
All right, he's being asked questions and answering. Trump Tower, yep. Packed with
my taxes
spectators.
Well. My taxes will, first of all, I have a much simpler tax statement. It'll be much simpler. When I do my return, it'll be much, my returns go up to the ceiling and beyond, which is ridiculous. And you spend millions of dollars at a high level on lawyers, accountants, and everything else.
The Dow, which opened lower, has not improved. Listening to the speech.
The bracket of 25, the big difference is many of the loopholes and many of the deductions, which are old, have been there for a year, are antiquated in many cases, or are put there because a lot of the people that get these deductions are contributed to Hillary, they're contributing to Bush, they're contributing to every candidate but Trump, because I'm not taking any money, I'm self-funding. And these people want these deductions. There will be people, we're reducing taxes, but believe me, there will be people in the very upper echelons that won't be thrilled with this. We're taking away deductions, and that's one of the reasons we're able to lower it. So
it will be fascinating to see, Noam, now that he is making this specific proposal, whether this affects the polls in any meaningful way. There is no doubt, and you have been reporting this morning, that this major new poll out showing Trump at 21 still leading the pack, but with Ben Carson biting at his heels at 20, basically statistically a tie. It'll be interesting to see the polls tomorrow and so forth as people digest this. If indeed the principal attraction of the billionaire businessman is his financial acumen, then this is the litmus test for me. The stuff about the border, which, as you know, I detest his positions on that, I think are maybe what has generated a lot of the early hard right support. But this, you can't win with the hard right. This is more toward the center. It is progressive. It affects the people at the lower echelons and might have some legs.
And if it's true that his support has been in the lower echelons, they're going to love what this says. So the median salary in the United States in 2014, according to the census, was $52,000 a year. So he's talking about a family making $50,000 or less will no longer pay taxes under his plan.
So that's half the nation, or
well, I don't know if it's half the nation.
Half the workers.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how median and average.
I'd have to work it out, how that works out in terms of how many families. But the
median salary. It's lots of people. It's people that work, if get a school teacher. What does a school teacher make? Don't they make around 50 grand?
That's probably right.
I mean, a cop. What does a cop make? A starting cop.
Starting cop in the city is in like low 30s.
So I think that there are a lot of people for whom this may be attractive. The question is whether it works. I remember Steve Forbes came out when he was a candidate and said, I forget what his percentage was, maybe 16, 17. And then some other candidate came out and said that they were 1% lower than Steve Forbes. You know, it was like silly. It got stupid. And everyone was saying, hey, it's not going to pay for anything. You're fighting against the budget deficit and you're creating a tax plan that will only inflame the budget deficit. I'm curious to see what neutral economists say is the likely outcome of this. You can't have a plan that counts on growth. You can't bet on growth. He said if the growth is more than 3% a year, the numbers look rosy. What if it's 3? What if it's a negative 3? What if it's flat? What if it's this as kind of tepid as it's been under the Obama year so far. So I'll be interested to see. All right, let me, he just said something that was very true. We protect Saudi Arabia, but get nothing back from them. You know, Saudi Arabia, I think, is the font of most evil. I think that Saudi Arabia is the evil force manipulating the ISIS crazy people. But that's enough about that. We'll return. If Trump is still speaking, we'll dip back into that. You're listening to 77 WABC. It is 19 minutes after 11 o'clock, and we shall return.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
24%. I actually saw a number.
The Dow sinking lower as Donald speaks, now down to 197. Dow down 197. It's obvious that many rich Americans, as Trump has just said, do not like his plan. But he says the taxpayer will fight income inequality by creating jobs. Noam, do you have specifics on the plan?
Yeah, I can give you the specifics he's laid out already. So people earning less, individuals earning less than $25,000 and married couples earning less than $50,000 would not pay any more federal income tax under this plan. It would also lower the corporate tax rate from 35% to 15%. And it would lower the highest income tax rate, which is now at 39%, to 25%. So those are the biggest points out of this.
So 25% would be the highest that the high end pay.
That's right.
But he would make the money up by eliminating certain deductions.
Well, he'd also propose eliminating the so-called carried interest loophole that allows managers of hedge funds and private equity firms to pay this lower tax rate than most individuals do. He said that would be gone. So hedge fund managers would pay a whole lot more.
Okay, what do you think about Trump? What do you think about President Obama earlier today? I'm opening the lines right now, 866-Geraldo. 866-437-2536. We'll take George in Manhattan first. George, what's on your mind, bud?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. We worked together at Willowbrook. I was on the Willowbrook staff.
Excellent.
I was one of the people that supported you. Anyhow, my feeling about Trump is that the only way he made his money is to declare bankruptcy. He was one of my first customers when I was selling ice machines to Taj Mahal. And the truth behind the story is that Donald Trump has actually lost money. He took the money. If he had taken the money his father gave him and simply invested it, he would have gotten many more dollars than he has now by declaring bankruptcy whenever he can.
Well, he's declared bankruptcy, not him, but the Trump Enterprises four times. He's had 500 successes. I mean, I don't agree with that. I think that, like Carly Fiorina, no business is 100%.
Do you think he would have made money if he hadn't invested it somewhere else?
I don't know. I know that they took billions out of the gambling industry before they abandoned it, and then it went on hard times. I'm not. Believe me, I didn't lose money, and if you lost money, I sympathize with you. I certainly understand why you have a different point of view on Trump's business acumen than most, George. And I'm sorry you lost even a dime. You know, the stuff happens. I invested in General Motors just before that went bankrupt. I mean, that happens. Okay, Igor in Brooklyn. Igor, what's on your mind, buddy?
Good morning, Geraldo.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. And first of all, please, sorry for my English, because I'm afraid nobody...
The president said, you can find someone from everywhere in New York. That's what makes us beautiful. But go ahead,
yes,
what's on your mind?
Thank you. Geraldo, I disagree with you, with your opinion that right now the Ukrainian is not so important because of the Syria. In my opinion, the main goal of Putin is to distract everybody from what he wants. He wants Ukraine totally take under his control, and he's just bluffing. His country is weak. He won't be able to do anything good in Syria. He will destroy more cities, and he will bring more damage to his country. But right now he's bluffing, he's liar, he's hypocrite, and that's what they teach them in KGB. It's just out
there. KGB, yeah. Listen, Igor, your point of view is excellent, and it could very well be all a huge distraction from the mischief and the deadly mischief that Russia has perpetrated in eastern Ukraine, including shooting down the Malaysian airliner. I get that. I totally get that. I sympathize with the Ukrainian people. But I remember prior to all of this tumult, prior to Crimea, The entire Ukraine was with a Russian sympathizer in office who headed that country and kept it in the Eastern Bloc. That's not the case now. Of course, Ukraine has been dismembered. We have to fight against that.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Big morning here in the Big Apple. Both these events happening on the island at the center of the world, Manhattan Island. First over on First Avenue at the United Nations, the President of the United States made his address. It was, to me, grossly disappointing. I mean, from a personal point of view, it was a speech I thought filled with platitudes and generalities. It was a speech I thought better suited as the acceptance speech he could have made for the Nobel Peace Prize. We have to work together. Dictators never succeed. Democracy is the way forward. Good. Yes, true. But the Pope said all that the day before and probably said it better. So that was the president's speech. And then Donald Trump at around 11 o'clock came forward and, playing to his strength, announced his plan for taxes going forward, taxes and growth. I'm not an economist. It sounded fine to me. I want to see, some people that I trust. I'd like to see some economists who are neither liberals or conservatives, but just rather scientists who tell me whether his plan adds up. Does it add up to a balanced budget? I get that he wants to create growth. Growth is iffy, though, because the United States does not exist as an island. We're tied to the world economy. There is connectivity. They're all talking about that constantly. Connectivity. So I don't know. Someone will tell us, and I'm sure as the day progresses, we'll find out whether or not the revenue will be sufficient to support the lavish spending, not even lavish spending, the enormous spending of the federal government. I just don't know. We'll find out. At least he presented something that was very, very specific. What do you think about that? I'll take a couple calls on Trump, and then we'll go back to the president. In Poughkeepsie, here's Pete. What's up, Pete?
Geraldo, thank you for taking my call. My brother was one of your disciples when you were a young lord.
How about that? All right. Did he ever pay me? No, that's okay.
I'm just looking at how Trump's plan is going to add up in terms of revenue. I think Obama's doing a good job with the deficit. Another thing was when he was talking to the United Nations, you have to remember it's a body of the entire world, so you're not going to start suggesting specifics there. And I think people need to give him a shot because he's kept us safe and he's kept us out of trouble, additional trouble. I mean, if you look back.
But I love the guy, but hold it, Pete. I got to say this. I love the guy, and I'm rooting for him. I voted for him 2 times. But there is no way on earth we can look at the Middle East and say that it's better today than it was 7 years ago. There's no way. It is a mess. It is a chaotic mess.
There was two full-fledged wars going on at that time, so I can't say.
There were fewer people being killed in the full-fledged wars than are dying now. They're people are being massacred. People are on the move. People have been disrupted. I don't see how things are better now, that things are better in Iraq, for example. Are they better now than they were the day before we left Iraq? In Libya, are they better now than the day before Gaddafi was overthrown? I don't think there's any supporter of Barack Obama that can say, yes, they are better off now than they were then.
The first question is, why did we ever went into Iraq?
That's an excellent question, too, and I'm totally with you there. And Trump is absolutely right. That George W. Bush brought us into a war that was unnecessary, accomplished nothing, and started this process that President Obama has accelerated with his incompetence, with his idealistic incompetence. I mean, that's just the way I see it. And I wish that the Republicans would run on those on the issues rather than this baloney about Hillary's email. Who cares about her damn emails? It is such a total distraction. It is such a nothing. It is a great big nothing. the email scandal? Why aren't they dealing with the facts, the real facts? What did she do as Secretary of State? Did she make the world a safer place? Was she effective? Was she not effective? Deal with that. Deal with real life and stop with this, the Whitewater and Vince Foster and Mena, Arkansas, and this baloney and that baloney. It is so, every time I see the House Oversight Committee and Daryl Issa and the new one, the guy from South Carolina, Trey Gowdy, when you see them, well, you know what I see? I see, okay, here comes another BS attack from a hatchet man. From a hatchet man. A right-wing hatchet man is now going to go email and drip, drip, drip. What is this drip, drip? Drip, drip what? What is this puddle? What is it? What has it told us? Remember the IRS scandal? Fast and furious. The first black attorney general on earth here in the United States gets held in contempt of Congress. For what? For what? What was accomplished by that other than to make people angry and divide America further? Why don't you deal with the issues? Grow up. What do you think John Boehner quit? John Boehner quit because he couldn't manage the crazy people in his caucus. They want to shut the government down. Planned Parenthood are going to shut the government down. That's great. You're going to shut the government down. That's the way we're going to want to vote for your party over the other party because you want to shut the government down. Give me a break. I'm sick of this. And you listen to radio, we're going to shut the government down. We're going to, come on. What is that? Is that any way to run a nation? The email scandal. How much energy are we going to burn? We're going to piss away over this big nothing. This big nothing. It is absolutely zero in terms of the impact on the average American person. That's why the Trumps of the world get the attention that they're getting. Email scandal. Give me a break. It is absolutely full of crap. Full of crap. And every time you hear one of these ranking, hatchet-faced Republican congressmen saying, she had another 20 emails. So what? So what? What is the crime? You tell me what the crime is that they allege that she committed. What is the crime there? How are you impacted in any way by that? So you attack the email scandal. What's next? You're going to attack Obama's ears? Be disappointed in the fact that they've made a mess of the Middle East. Be proactive. Think of something better. The email scandal. Is that going to affect your kids, your grandkids? The email scandal? They could take that scandal and shove it up their ass. 47 minutes after 11.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back to 77 WABC. Noam Layden, Geraldo Rivera right here, 53 minutes after 11 o'clock. So I tell you, brother, it's been an eventful morning. I'm sorry I didn't get to all the callers, but I think that in terms of the, let's just parse what's happened today. Let's just review what we learned today. Morning Joe says that sometimes. You have in terms of Syria, I think there is a crisis of epic proportion. And shame on the world for letting it percolate because of the division of the great powers and the schism within the United States on what to do. We wanted to bomb Assad because he used poison gas. And then the Congress didn't go along with that. Why? Because Assad wasn't as bad as ISIS. You know, we had all this indecision. So for 4 years, you've had a situation where all these people have been killed. I mean, what, a quarter of a million at least?
Oh, I think it's more than that.
More than that. Okay. And millions now on the move. And it didn't really hit us until the picture of the three-year-old drowned on the beach in the Turkish beach and the kid just laying there. I have it imprinted in my brain, the kid in right where the wash hits the sand and the kid face down and his little hand turned up. I could cry just thinking about it. So that's the picture. Now we're motivated to do something about the refugees. I mean, fine, I want compassion. I want pragmatic idealism and all the rest of that. But if you don't stop it at the source, the whole country's going to drain out. if they sense in Syria that there's a better life and that there is this acceptance because of the extraordinary circumstance, who's going to stay? Nobody that can walk will stay. Anyone who can move will go. And they get, where are they going to go? They're going to go everywhere. They're going to disrupt those places where they go. And they're going to bring, I mean, amongst them, there's going to be, I mean, the vast majority will be suffering refugees. I totally get that. But hidden among them will be some who are bad actors or who will become, like the Somalis who went to the Twin Cities, 40 of them returned back to fight in Somalia for Al-Shabaab, the Al-Qaeda affiliate in Africa. I mean, that's just it's just demographics. It's going to happen. So we have to do something. I hope that at 5 o'clock today you don't have macho posturing, but you have some quiet reflection between these two men who hid the two strongest militaries on Earth, and they say, okay, let's do this. We'll coordinate airstrikes, for instance. Do the easy stuff. All right, well, let's coordinate airstrikes so there's never a chance where a Russian and an American aircraft or a French aircraft or a British aircraft are in the skies at the same time bombing the same target. We'll have one air traffic controller who's going to coordinate everybody. That's really easy. The port of Latakia, whatever it is. Okay, we grant that that is a Russian base, and to the extent that we can use it as well, we will use it. But let's build the safe haven based around that area right now. Let's start right now. The Alawite homeland that Assad belongs to. That's a good place to start. Welcome the Sunnis. Welcome anybody. The refugee camps in Jordan are functioning well now. They've gotten over their hump. They're air conditioned. Their businesses have been set up. They are prospering little communities now, relative stability. Let's do that in spades with Russia and the United States working together. And, of course, the United Nations and all the nonprofits. And then Trump with this bombshell tax plan. Whether that works, I don't know how it sounded to you.
I think it's great. You know, I've always said, and people always get mad, but I call this the accidental presidency. I mean, I think he never thought that he'd be in the position that he is today. And part of that is now he has to play catch up to all these people who knew they were going to run for a year and created all these policies on all different types of issues. He has to backpedal a little bit. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because he gets to sort of dip his toe in the water and see what's going on out there. And I think this was a great start. I mean, he has a firm plan. You know, he's talked about this wall. But when you ask him questions, he's like, it's going to be a big wall. It's going to be a beautiful wall.
Beautiful wall.
Okay, but this is firm. Now I have something, a piece of paper I can look at and say, okay, now I know where he stands on taxes. Okay, now you got to start giving me everything else. And I'll wait for it. But I think this is a good first step.
And this is what he should have emphasized from the get-go. This is Trump the businessman. I'm successful. I want you to be successful. That's what I want. As the market tanks because of the International Monetary Fund said world growth is more stagnant than we thought. So everybody now today is pessimistic. Well, I want, this is something that rather than that hideous immigration plan that he must back down on or modify or moderate or make more humane. This is something that plays to his strength, and I wish him the best on it. I hope it works out when the economists do the bottom line. Thanks for listening, everybody. I love you. See you tomorrow.